Hello, and welcome to the Sunday edition of Learning English Weekend. I'm Mario Ritter. Here's what we have on today's program. First, Pete Musto brings us this week's Higher Education Report. Next, we have a special program in honor of the Independence Day holiday in the United States. On Words and Their Stories, Anna Mateo will look at some differences between British and American English. And in the second half of our show, we present our American History program, The Making of a Nation: Education, Language, and History. They're all coming up in the next half hour. Now, Pete Musto tells us about two students at Tulane University in the southern state of Louisiana. Pete talks with a young Pakistani woman who is studying finance and business. Pete also talks to a young Chinese man who is finding new ways to connect with fellow students.
Usually, students want to go to a university that will give them the most education and experience possible. But some students, like Shirzad Agha from Pakistan, seek a college that encourages students to offer something in return. Agha, who was born in Islamabad, has never been afraid of a challenge. After finishing her undergraduate degree, she went to work for Bank Al Falah Limited. She managed almost 100 offices across Pakistan. But Agha soon learned that if she wanted to keep moving forward in her career, she would need international experience. So, she decided to get her master's degree in finance at a U.S. university. Agha applied to the Fulbright Scholarship Program. In 2015, the program placed her at Tulane University. Tulane first opened as a medical college in 1834. The school is a private research university located in the southern U.S. city of New Orleans, Louisiana. New Orleans is famous for its music, cooking, and colonial European buildings. The city also has a rich and unique mix of French, Spanish, African, and Creole cultures. When Agha first arrived, she did not have problems communicating. English is an official language of Pakistan, so she says there was no real language barrier. She says Tulane wants students to enjoy life and have a good time. Professors frequently inform her of social events happening around the city.
It's kind of funny that our program director, he sends us an email every week, you know. Oh, there's a party happening there, there's a party happening there. So you don't get to see those kind of things happening at many different universities.
But what interested Agha most was applying what she learned in her classes to the real world. In other words, she wanted to use her education to solve problems and improve her community, not just earn a grade or improve herself. Agha wanted to be involved in the Darwin Fenner Managed Fund class. The class is a special program that accepts only 49 students from the whole school. The school lends $4 million from its endowment to the students to invest in the stock market. The students are expected to help the endowment grow. Agha says that since the program first began, the students' investments have been highly successful. Another international student, George Wu, also wanted to give back to the Tulane community. He started his undergraduate degree in accounting there in 2015. Wu was born in Hong Kong, China, but ever since he was a child, he knew he wanted to study in the U.S. He says Tulane has been a great experience for him. He found he loved the individual attention his professors gave him. He says he did not receive that kind of attention from his teachers in China, and he has really benefited from it.
It is a really good way for them to improve study and knowledge. It is really important for the professors to take care of those students in the class.
Wu wanted to help his classmates by giving them the same attention he was getting. In high school, Wu took several advanced placement or AP classes. These are classes which are much more challenging than regular classes. Many universities often accept these classes as college credit. Wu now works in the Tulane Success Center, a department at the school that provides academic aid. Wu helps other students do their homework and study for their business classes, a subject in which Wu excels. Wu also shares his culture with domestic students by working with the Tulane Chinese Students and Scholars Association. This association is a student group that holds events involving Chinese food and other traditions. Both international and domestic students can find lots of fun things to do at Tulane and in New Orleans. The city holds frequent festivals celebrating art and music through the year, such as the famous Mardi Gras Parade and New Orleans Jazz Festival. Wu says his friends in China are jealous that he can watch the professional basketball team, the New Orleans Pelicans, whenever he wants. Wu even joined an intramural basketball team at Tulane to make more friends. He says international students should try to make connections with domestic students however they can.
Sometimes you have to force yourself to get involved in a new environment.
Agha, the graduate student from Pakistan, says that enjoying the city and making the most of academic programs are important. But balancing work and play can be very difficult, she says. While she managed all her classes easily, she really struggled at first with being completely independent. Aga comes from a wealthy family and says she was not prepared for the responsibilities of living alone. Cooking, cleaning, and other tasks were all things she had never done for herself before. But she says learning how to solve even these simple problems has taught her a lot.
Once you come here, you're on your own. Nobody is going to back you up. Nobody is going to lend you a shoulder to cry on. And you're no longer in your parents' home where your parents would figure out everything. So it has transformed me from a girl to a woman, I think.
Agha now wants to return to Pakistan after her studies and create financial tools for people living in poverty. I'm Pete Musto.
Now it's time for Words and Their Stories with Anna Mateo. Today, Anna explores differences between American and British English. While the English language is spoken on both sides of the Atlantic Ocean, there are a lot of differences in the words we use.
Now, the VOA Learning English Program, Words and Their Stories. The 4th of July is Independence Day in the United States. On that day, we celebrate the decision by early American leaders to declare independence from Britain. While people in both England and the U.S. speak English, the two types of English can be very different. First, there are differences in spelling. The British like the letter U and have kept it in many words. Americans have dropped it. Somewhere in our language history, we decided that labor, color, and favorite were just fine without the U next to the O. But our differences go beyond spelling. Sometimes we use different words entirely. Here we live in apartments with elevators. Over there they live in flats with lifts. We put diapers on our babies and push them in strollers. The British love their babies just as much as we do, but they use nappies and prams instead. We power our cars with gas. They use petrol. And if we need to look in our car's dark trunk for something, we use a flashlight. They would use a torch to search their dark boot. Then there are idioms. Some British and American idioms have the same meaning, but use different words. For example, in the U.S., if you want to add your opinion to a conversation, you put in your 2 cents. In the U.K., they put in their tuppence, or 2 pence worth. Makes sense, they have pence, and we don't. Another example is the idiom about discussing the same issue again and again, especially if it cannot be resolved. We say, don't beat a dead horse. The British, on the other hand, advise against flogging one. And if you are keeping secrets in the United States, you have skeletons in the closet. In Great Britain, your skeletons would be hiding in a cupboard. But the real fun begins when we start exploring idioms and expressions that are unique to each country. Let's start with Bob's your uncle. To an American ear, that is a weird expression, and it has nothing to do with any relative you may or may not have named Bob. It is just a way to finish a set of simple instructions. What is the equivalent, the different but equal saying, in the U.S.? Americans might say, and there you have it. Or sometimes more dramatic people will say, ta-da! For example, imagine you are explaining to someone how to use your new fancy coffee maker. You explain. First, you grind the beans. Then you put them in the side container and pour water in the main container. Push the button and 10 minutes later, ta-da, you have a pot of coffee. Sometimes over a fresh pot of coffee, you may want to have a long talk with a friend. You might even throw in a little gossip. We call that a chat, or if it's a short conversation, chit-chat. The British would call it a chin-wag. If a British person says, I've got the hump, we might think they are sick and need to see a doctor. But in fact, when Brits say they have a hump, it means they are mildly annoyed or upset. In the U.S., some informal ways to say we are upset are, I'm ticked off, or I'm miffed. Now, when Americans are really surprised by something, we can say we are at a loss for words. Or more informally, we simply say we are shocked or blown away. Across the Atlantic, in the U.K., they are gobsmacked. In the U.S., we don't get smacked by gobs. Ever. Finally, a familiar word used by both countries, but in different ways, is cheers. We use the word over drinks when we are wishing someone good health or congratulating an accomplishment. The British use cheers to mean thank you. For that, we Americans say thank you. Now, we don't expect you to pick sides, both American and British English have their strong points. But thanks for listening to Words and Their Stories, a program that teaches American English. I'm Anna Mateo. Cheers. Thanks.
Next is our American history series, The Making of a Nation. This week, we report on the presidency of Calvin Coolidge. He took office after the death of President Warren Harding in 1923. Coolidge quickly gained support from the American public. Now, Kay Gallant and Harry Monroe tell us about the presidential election of 1924.
Coolidge was a quiet man who believed in limited government policies, but his silence hid a fighting political spirit. Coolidge had worked for many years to gain the White House. He would not give it up without a struggle. Coolidge moved quickly after becoming president to gain control of the Republican Party. He named his own advisors to important jobs, and he replaced a number of officials with people whose loyalty he could trust. Most Republicans liked Coolidge. They felt his popular policies would make him a strong candidate in the presidential election. For this reason, Coolidge faced only one serious opponent for the Republican presidential nomination in 1924. Coolidge's opponent was the great automobile manufacturer Henry Ford of Michigan. Ford had been a Democratic candidate for the Senate in 1918. He lost that election. But after the election, some people in his company began to call for Ford to be the Republican presidential nominee in 1924.
Ford was one of history's greatest inventors and manufacturers, but he had limited skills in politics. Ford was poorly educated. He had extreme opinions about a number of groups. He hated labor unions, the stock market, dancing, smoking, and drinking alcohol. But most of all, Ford hated Jews. He produced a number of publications accusing the Jewish people of organizing international plots. At first, Ford appeared to be a strong opponent to Coolidge. But soon he realized that Coolidge was too strong politically. His economic policies were popular among the people, and the nation was at peace. The party could not deny Coolidge's nomination. Ford himself put an end to his chances by telling the nation that it was perfectly safe with Coolidge. Calvin Coolidge won the presidential nomination easily at the 1924 Republican Convention in Cleveland, Ohio. The Republican delegates chose Charles Dawes of Illinois to run with him as the vice presidential candidate.
The Democratic Party was much more divided. Many of the groups that traditionally supported Democratic candidates now were fighting against each other. For example, many farmers did not agree on policies with people living in cities. The educated did not agree with uneducated people. And many Protestant workers felt divided from Roman Catholic and Jewish workers. These differences made it hard for the Democratic Party to to choose a national candidate. There was little spirit of compromise. Two main candidates campaigned for the Democratic nomination. The first was former Treasury Secretary William McAdoo. McAdoo had the support of many Democrats because of his strong administration of the railroads during the World War. Democratic voters in southern and western states liked him because of his conservative racial policies and his opposition to alcohol. The second main candidate was Alfred Smith, the governor of New York. Smith was a Roman Catholic. He was very popular with people in the eastern cities, Roman Catholics, and supporters of legal alcohol. But many rural delegates to the convention did not trust him.
The Democratic Party convention met in New York City. It quickly became a battle between the more liberal delegates from the cities and the more conservative delegates from rural areas. It was July. The heat was intense. Speaker after speaker appealed to the delegates for votes. One day passed, then another. For 9 days, the nation listened on the radio as the delegates argued about the nomination. The delegates voted 95 times without success. Finally, McAdoo and Smith agreed to withdraw from the race. Even then, the delegates had to vote 8 more times before they finally agreed on compromise candidates. The Democratic delegates finally chose John Davis to be their presidential nominee. Davis was a lawyer for a major bank. He had served briefly under President Wilson as ambassador to Britain. The delegates also chose Charles Bryan to be the vice presidential candidate. Bryan was the younger brother of the famous Democrat and populist leader William Jennings Bryan.
There also was a third party in the 1924 election. Many of the old progressive supporters of Theodore Roosevelt and Woodrow Wilson opposed the choices of the Republicans and Democrats. They thought the country needed another candidate to keep alive the spirit of reform. Progressive candidates had done well in the congressional election of 1922. But following the election, communists had gained influence in one of the major progressive parties. Most progressives did not want to join with communists, so they formed a new progressive party. The new party named Senator Robert La Follette of Wisconsin to be its presidential candidate. La Follette campaigned for increased taxes on the rich and public ownership of water power. He called for an end to child labor and limits on the power of the courts to interfere in labor disputes. And La Follette warned the nation about the dangers of single, large companies gaining control of important industries.
Coolidge won the 1924 election easily. He won the electoral votes of 35 states to just 12 for Davis of the Democrats. La Follette won only Wisconsin, his home state. Coolidge also won more popular votes than the other two candidates together. The American people voted for Coolidge partly to thank him for bringing back honesty and trust to the White House following the crimes of the Harding administration. But the main reason was that they liked his conservative economic policies and his support of business.
La Follette's Progressive Party died following the 1924 election. Most of his supporters later joined the Democrats, but the reform spirit of their movement remained alive through the next 4 years. They were difficult years for progressives. Conservatives in Congress passed laws reducing taxes for corporations and richer Americans.
Progressives fought for reforms in national agriculture policies. Most farmers did not share in the general economic growth of the 1920s. Instead, their costs increased while the price of their products fell. Many farmers lost their farms. Farmers and progressives wanted the federal government to create a system to control prices and the total supply of food produced. They said the government should buy and keep any extra food that farmers produced, and they called for officials to help them export food. Coolidge and most Republicans rejected these ideas. They said it was not the business of a free government to fix farm prices, and they feared the high costs of creating a major new government department and developing export markets. Coolidge vetoed three major farm reform bills following his election.
The debate over farm policy was in many ways like the debate over taxes or public controls on power companies. There was a basic difference of opinion about the proper actions of government. More conservative Americans believed the purpose of government was to support private business, not to control it. But more liberal Americans believed that government needed to do more to make sure that citizens of all kinds could share the nation's wealth more equally. Coolidge and the Republicans were in control in the 1920s. For this reason, the nation generally stayed on a conservative path. The Democrats and progressives would have to wait until later to put many of their more liberal ideas into action.
Next Sunday, listen again for more history about America in the 1920s. That's our program for today. Thank you for spending some time with us. Listen again tomorrow for As It Is. It will be the 4th of July, America's Independence Celebration. You can listen to our broadcasts or podcasts. You can find more stories, videos, and English learning activities, including lessons and detailed lesson plans, on our website, learningenglish.voanews.com. Get the most out of VOA Learning English. You won't find anything quite like it anywhere else. And keep learning English through stories from around the world, from VOA Learning English on the Voice of America.